Thank you all very much, and a special thanks to Dr. Nancy Krieger for inviting me and having a data geek come to speak to you on measuring social determinants of health within Statistics Canada. And for those of you who don't know, Statistics Canada is the nation's statistical agency, so we collect data on the social life of Canada as well as on Canada's economy, and of course, we collect health statistics. And I have nothing to declare. So how did health inequalities come into the public discourse in Canada? And very briefly, and I'll leave tons out, universal Medicare in Canada came fully in force in the mid-1960s. And by the early 1970s, a pivotal report was issued by the Government of Canada, then Minister of Health Marc Lalonde, called the Lalonde Report. And this report recognized publicly the importance of social factors and economic factors in the lives of Canadians as having a direct influence on Canadians' health, and called for measurement and action. And so health inequalities have been on the public radar since that time. So as this slide indicates, even in 2010, on reports, public reports of plans and priorities of the two large health departments in Canada, recognizing the importance of addressing inequalities and social determinants of health. And the bottom two bullet points speak to the measurement agenda, both within Statistics Canada and in our sister organization, the Canadian Institute for Health Information. So both national information providers have the collection and reporting of inequalities in health on the radar. So we're fortunate in Canada that we've been developing our health statistics program with a population health framework. So within this framework, we wanted to have data that would enable us to look at health outcomes, of course, mortality and serious morbidity and mental and physical health, and also to be able to look at determinants of health like smoking and alcohol and body mass index and activity, living and working conditions, access to care, social support and belonging to your community, and the context in which you live in terms of your neighborhood, your community, and environmental influences on health. And we wanted to have data that we could look at for all different groups within our population, so age and sex, and important social determinants, education and income, and employment income and occupation, and to look at specific groups by ethnic origin, our Aboriginal or Indigenous populations, new Canadians. We have lots of data in Canada, and it has various strengths and weaknesses. So we have excellent population health surveys, and especially since the mid-1990s with the launch of the National Population Health Survey in Canada, which is a longitudinal survey tracking a cohort of Canadians every couple of years. And then in 2000, we had the launch of the Canadian Community Health Survey, which again is a huge cross-sectional survey that we are now conducting on an annual basis. And through this type of data, we've really fleshed out the population health framework. So they're really excellent. Yes, 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 outcomes, determinants, stratification variables. But the issue with that is they're relatively recent, for one, so not good for helping us with long-term tracking. And they're sample surveys, so sometimes you just can't get down to the level of detail that you want to get down to really understand what's happening, both for smaller geographies and communities and for smaller groups in the population or for rarer health events. So then we have these health administrative data banks that are vast. They're essentially censuses. So in healthcare administrative data, we have a census of acute care hospitalizations in Canada. We have a census of births and deaths. We have a census of cancer through a cancer registry. So these are fantastic data sets for the health outcomes that we're interested in, but they're silent on the determinants of health. And not too much for stratifying either, other than age and sex. And then on the other hand, we have the census of population, which for a large sample of Canadians, 20% of Canadians, we have a lot of information for stratification, education, income, employment, ethnicity, housing, and so on. But this is not a health data collection, so nothing about health. So what do we do? How can we get more value out of all of this data? Two methods we developed, area-based methods, so we're looking at health outcomes from these wonderful data banks by small areas. So for example, lower income neighborhood in a city compared with a higher income neighborhood. And then we are doing record linkage. So the same individual in one data bank linked to the same individual in another data bank, compensating then for the deficiencies in both of those two original data banks. So I'm going to just share with you some examples of both of these things, starting with the area-based method. And in this example, we're looking at neighborhood income in urban areas, and we've divided the population into five groups, from the lowest household incomes to the highest household income neighborhoods in these urban areas. And we're looking at mortality. This type of work gives us the only long-term trends that we have in Canada on the progress we're making or not making in addressing inequalities with respect to income. So, looking at life expectancy at birth and going from 1971 to the turn of the new millennium, and looking at neighborhoods broken into those five groups, Q1 being the richest, Q5 being the poorest, solid lines, men, dashed lines, women, we see that life expectancy has gone up for both groups over this period in Canada, and also that the gap in 1971 between the richest and the poorest neighborhoods for both genders was about 4 years, and by the turn of the new millennium, we still have a gap, but it's now sitting at 3 years. With this kind of approach, you can also look at mortality for specific age groups, in this case, infants. So we're looking at progress in reducing the infant mortality rate in Canada from 1971 to 2001. And you can look at specific causes of death. So in the case of injuries, we can see with the red line that the poorest neighborhoods in Canada have significantly elevated risk of death from injury, and this has persisted over time, but the gap has narrowed. And we can look at things like causes of death that are amenable to medical care, and in this particular graph, we're looking at the difference between the richest and the poorest neighborhood. So these differences were much larger, inequalities were much greater with respect to these particular types of causes of death in the 70s than they were by the end of the study period. And you can take an area-based approach to studying income inequalities to an international level, and so I just wanted to show you one example of this, which was a study that was looking at urban areas in five countries and was looking at income inequality in the sense of the share of household income held by the poorer half of the population in each of these urban areas, and then looking at mortality among the working-age population. And what we saw from this analysis, it is admittedly getting old now, is that inequality was greater in the cities in the United States and in the United Kingdom, and working-age mortality was higher than what we observed in Canada, Australia, and Sweden at that time. And we are working on revisiting this one right now. So you can also apply area-based methods to the study of illness and acute care hospitalizations in Canada. So I'll just show you an example of this, looking this time not at income, but looking at areas with higher concentration of Canada's Indigenous populations and comparing that to smaller areas with lower concentrations. So what we see in doing work like this, if you look at any of the blue bars which represent the Indigenous populations of Canada, their rates of hospitalization are significantly higher than the green bars, which are areas with lower concentrations of these populations across many very important reasons for becoming hospitalized, including diseases of the respiratory system, the circulatory system, mental and behavioral disorders, and injuries, poisonings, and other external causes of hospitalization. So now let's look at linking records for the same individual across more than one data bank. And in this case, we're looking at the census of population back in 1991, 15% of the people for which we have the rich source of all those stratification variables that we were talking about earlier. And linking that cohort directly to any death record we may have for the people, and about 10% of the people died during that 10-year period. So we're matching the same person in one bank to the other. So this gives us the first information that we've had for Canada on mortality by individual level of income, employment, occupation, ethnicity, and so on. So I'll just show you a little bit. One of the first things that we observed in having this new data is the differences between the poorest and the wealthiest Canadians are much greater when you have measures of individual level income than what we were able to detect before using the area concentration approach, which was all we had before. Also, we can do new things that we couldn't do before, like looking at the gradient within the gradient. So in this case, looking at differences in level of educational attainment across differences in levels of income. And so we can see that in every income group, Canadians with less than a high school graduation have the lowest life expectancy. We can also look at particular populations of significant interest in Canada where inequalities are particularly pronounced. So this slide is looking at our Métis and registered Indian population, just showing the graph today for women. And we can see that the probability of surviving to older ages is lower for our registered Indian and Métis population than what we can observe for the poorest Canadians overall. And we're able to look at extremely marginalized populations, in this case, homeless persons and persons living in marginal housing, shelters, rooming houses, hotels with shared bathroom and that type of accommodation. And of all Canadians, they have the least likelihood of surviving to older ages. So now I'll show you just a few results from our population health surveys. With the Canadian Community Health Survey, you can look at things like the social patterning across different risk factors, in this case obesity, with women with less than high school education having higher levels of body mass index. We can do longitudinal studies like this one, where we learned that if we look at people who didn't experience distress at the beginning of our longitudinal study, those who became distressed, experiencing clinically detectable levels of anxiety or depression, that what tended to be a mediating factor is the presence of stress in their life, job stress, personal stress, stressful life events. We can compare our two countries. We did a joint survey between Canada and the US with the National Center for Health Statistics. So in this slide, we're looking at residents with unmet need for prescription drugs. There's unmet need in both countries, and there's a gradient, but it's greater in the United States than it was in Canada. And we've also been able to link our healthcare surveys themselves to those large administrative data banks. So I'll just quickly show you something that we did looking at what some people determine is avoidable hospitalizations. So those hospitalizations that might have been prevented from better primary care or care from a family doctor. And we've learned that Canadians with lower incomes and that are less educated are more likely to experience these avoidable hospitalizations. And the last thing I'll mention is a new project that we're doing at Statistics Canada with our CPHA, which is the equivalent to your APHA, and other organizations like the Public Health Agency of Canada and the Canadian Population Health Initiative. And this project is very big and ambitious. It's reporting on the differences in health outcomes by levels of income in the population, but taking that to a new level to look at what is the cost to the Canadian healthcare system of having inequality in Canada. And so building a new argument that's an economic argument. So I'll just show you one slide from that work. This is looking at the direct cost of healthcare in Canada for physicians, for hospitalizations, and for prescribed drugs. And we can see that there's definitely a gradient. So in Canada, which has a publicly funded healthcare system, it's there's a cost to Canada that can be measured in terms of direct healthcare costs. There are other costs as well, and this project wants to go beyond the direct healthcare costs, but this is what we've got done so far. So that's a tour of how we measure social determinants of health in Canada at StatCan, and thank you very much.